The 9 till Noon Show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. Good morning if you're just joining us. You missed an interesting hour, I think, where we primarily handed it over to housing. It just ran on like that. We had other things to talk about, but it was just one of those topics that filled the hour. Some of your comments which have been coming in, and keep them coming in to us, please. I have a site which was left to me and I applied to the council for an SI house to be built on it. We presently live in a mobile home with three children, yet I appear to be getting nowhere with the council to help us. We would be one off the housing list. Well, I hope, I'm not sure what role your local councillor might have, but I'd certainly reach out to them. I was in Letterkenny this week and bought a parking ticket for the main street. When I checked how long I had, I realised the clock on the machine wasn't changed. So if anyone gets a ticket this week, just double check your timings. So the clock's changed, but the ticketing machine didn't change. What about all the teachers leaving because they can't get a full-time contract? Nurses who came home when their country called them home during the pandemic never got contracts either. Another, didn't hear the beginning of your show, but hear comments on landlords and vultures. The vultures were invited into this country and have bought up everything in sight. That was government ineptitude or policy. They should step up now and prevent them buying any more. All sales now should go to buy to live in till this crisis is over. Another, Greg, I presume you realise you can't slag politicians now after your midweek junket. Well, I don't really slag politicians, to be honest with you. I think our role here is to question and challenge politicians when it's necessary. I'm not sure it qualifies as a junket either. It wouldn't be on top of my priority to do again very quick. You're over, do a show, and then you're back the next day. There's nothing in it for me. I didn't come back with any brown envelopes or bags full of cash. Just went over to do a programme to try and bring us a little bit closer to Europe if we want to, just to understand what goes on over there. But listen, I respect your point of view, and that's why I read it out. Ask Micheál Colum, how many asylum seekers, the kind that were busted overnight to accommodation in Letterkenny, are in this part, or his part of the country, or county, sorry. I'm not on about Ukrainian war refugees here, but mostly groups of young, fit men. I don't understand how fit people are. I don't understand what difference that makes in terms of whether they come to Ireland or not. We have a policy, whether you like it or not, in terms of both Ukrainian refugees and also other types of migrants, people moving from one country to another. We have a policy there. It doesn't matter whether they can fight, if they're old enough to be in an army, whether they're fit, sick or otherwise. It's really not part of the policy here. I hear an awful lot of people talking about young, fit men. We have, as I say, whether you, and this is what you could debate, whether we should have this policy or not. And that was the big debate, I suppose, pre-Brexit, through Brexit and post-Brexit in the UK, in Britain. But we have this policy. And but this caller says, was there any consultation with the council on this? I don't believe there's much consultation on any of that, really, to be honest with you. A caller says we should look at countries like Finland and Denmark with similar sized populations, both in the EU, as to how they do housing and health so well. This council should send a delegation to look at their system. That comes in from Connell. Thanks, Colin. Connell, tell Micheál Colum, stop waffling, change his record, says another. The disbanding of local district councils by Fine Gael's Phil Hogan has added greatly to the lack of council-built houses, believes a listener. Another, Green Party not allowing the roads. That's in terms of the road infrastructure, and they do have a balance, don't they, in terms of spend on public transport versus road building. I'm not sure, as the listener says, it's bound to have an impact, isn't it? I'm not sure to what extent, though. I take extreme offence to Doreen's comments on emigration. I have three children living abroad because this country is a mess. She's spouting Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil crap, they say, defending the indefensible. Another, a lack of foresight, either intentionally or through stupidity by our government yet again. Yes, they saw this coming. The defective blocks crisis is the next avalanche coming. It's really not being given the government support that it deserves, either financially, administratively, or in terms of mental health support. This is a tsunami unfolding in front of our eyes. It gets airtime because of the likes of Paddy Dever, but our elected representatives need to action supports or change. Let's see what else is coming through here. A caller not happy with Doreen Kennedy and some of her views there. But some people are agreeing with her. If Micheál wants respect, perhaps he could refer to the countries the Republic as opposed to the 26 counties. Another, Trump is the only man who talks about stopping war. Surely we should be listening to him. as president, Donald Trump, if you go, just some basic research, some of his language was warmongering. He threatened nukes against North Korea. He threatened nukes against Russia. He said that if they did anything, that he would annihilate them effectively, like they've never seen before. A lot of his language at that time was quite warmongery, and he maintains that Ukraine wouldn't have happened if he was president. But it's not because he would have gone over and negotiated and all this type of stuff. That's not really how he approaches things. So it's well worth just having a quick search on Google or your preferred search engine, just to get a flavour of Trump's language as president in relation to China, North Korea, and I mean, just even in terms of China. I mean, you'd be very familiar with how he says that words and what often followed after he said that. Some would say quite antagonistic and not very peaceful or war avoiding. As I say, I'm just saying make sure that we all check all our back, everything that's been said before, I suppose, settling on a fixed opinion. Morning, Greg. How many of our councillors have second homes and properties? I asked that question, of course. Thank you, Micheál Colm, speaking the truth about housing. My two daughters have to leave Gweedore to go to Australia, not because they want to, because they have to. Micheál speaks from his heart always for all the family and hard times living in Donegal. With two children in Australia and one more thinking of going, I don't know how Doreen can say at least they have a good education when Doreen has three children thousands of miles away. She might think differently. Micheál Colm is wrong. We do need holiday homes, as 50% of the tourist beds in Donegal are occupied by refugees. The knock-on effect on tourism business is drastic. That 50% doesn't tell the whole story either, because there are some parts that it's more than 50%, and you just feel for the cafes and the gift shops and the other businesses in that area that will see a big, big fall off in footfall. And I remember when a hotel was just being taken over in Letterkenny right at the very start of this. And my concern at that point was, what about the other businesses? Because this was never going to be short term. What about the impact this would have on tourism? And I said at the time, this is not being well thought out. And yet here we are a year and a half later, and the chickens are coming home to roost. Tell Doreen a flight left Dublin bound for Australia 3 weeks ago with 87 young Irish women, males and females. Sorry, I beg your pardon. Tell Doreen a flight left Dublin bound for Australia 3 weeks ago with 87 young Inishowen males and females. If there was work here and better pay conditions, would this be happening? Well, that is a shocking figure. As I say, I'm all for people wanting to explore the world and grow. If you do, in fact, it wasn't for me. I tried it, didn't like it. Others do try it, do like it, but you just don't want it to be something they feel they've no choice on, do you? Going with a good education is good to go anywhere, but these young ones are going away to stay away because they can't afford to live here. Tunnel vision. Another, if a landlord has a good tenant who looks after the property right and pays their rent on time, they wouldn't be evicted. Unfortunately, this type of tenant is scarce, and if you're going to damage someone's property and cause constant headaches to the landlord, then you deserve to be evicted. I mean, on the flip side, though, is it not possible that some are getting, let's just say, €800 a month, and they think, you know, I could probably get €1,200 or €1,300 a month if I switch tenants? You're not saying that's not happening either. I don't think it's all black and white here. I think there's an awful lot of grey as well. Why are we crying all the time? Nothing here when there's so many people wants to come here. It's a big change from 70 years ago. No power, water, toilets, bathrooms, etc. Is there still independent councillors? I thought they were all blue shirt Fine Gaelers and Fianna Fáilers and Greens. My spelling is bad because I can't stomach them. It's okay. Don't worry about your spelling. Hi, Greg. Ask your panel, what's the story with 17 new houses sitting finished, carpet blinds, etc. in Milford empty since the Ukrainian families moved out? I'm not familiar with that story at all. Another, the Irish people, well, I am, but I'm not familiar with that latest development in relation to it. The Irish people built many countries like Australia, America and England with no education. Imagine what they will do now with an education. Hi, Greg. You all did a great show from Brussels. Well done. And congratulations on the big birthday also. Best radio station in the country, says Mary. Thanks, Mary. I really appreciate that feedback from you. Just to let you know, there'll be a community clean-up in Annagree on Sunday at 12 noon. An hour or less of your time is all they need to ensure the village and surrounds are little litter-free. So it's going to be a good day Sunday, I'm told. Dry at least. I thought it was very mild yesterday. 15-odd degrees, but it felt warmer. But if you want to get out, get some fresh air and help clean up Annagry, 12 noon. I'm not sure where they're meeting, but I presume it will be pretty obvious. If you want to let me know where you're all meeting, I can pass that information on as well. Right, okay. And just to let you know, the cleanup in Annagry is this Sunday at 12 noon. The meeting at the Annagry Community Hall. Pickers, gloves and bags supplied. So fair play to you for ringing back in for that with that information. That's meet up at the Annagry Community Hall. Right, okay. We're joined on the programme now by Dave Coleman. He's from Coleman Legal. You know that Coleman Legal, on behalf of the Defective Blocks Ireland Group, is leading the legal bid for more than 1,600 homeowners seeking compensation between the amount paid out by the government and the shortfall homeowners may find themselves needing to rebuild their homes. So we want to get an update as to where this is at. So, Dave, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Thank you.
Right, so how are things progressing, Dave? Where are we at in this process?
The case is going very well, Greg. I suppose it's a vast piece of litigation. It's one of the biggest ever in the state. And really, we have approached the commercial court in Dublin, in the High Court, and they have agreed to fast-track the case. So along with the other defendants, who are Cassidy Brothers, of course, the concrete quarry, the Donegal County Council and the NSAI, we've all agreed on a timeline to deliver documentation, etc., to enable the case to be fast-tracked in real terms through the courts. And that is ongoing at the moment. Everybody's on target to achieve their own milestones within the case. And it's going very well. We're quite pleased with the level of support from people. We're pleased with the level of information forthcoming. And obviously, we believe that the case is well-founded, and we hope to have a hearing in 2024.
Which is still quite some time away, but it just goes to show how slowly the wheels can turn in legal terms, that is actually kind of seen as fast-tracked, Dave. I mean, you're very familiar with that, but for us sort of lay folk, you know what I mean?
Yes, well, we would anticipate that it will take 24 months. And for a piece of litigation, the size that it is, that is quite an achievement. And normally, it's 36 to 48 months for these things to go through. And when you see it in months, a month, given that there's documentation to be shared among many people, is not a long piece of time, if you get me. So, look, we are very pleased with the way it's going, and that, you know, everybody is stepping up. All defendants are. We're not being met with a wall of silence or a wall of opposition, but rather this is a fact-based case. And of course, the facts are in the houses throughout Donegal and beyond. So, you know, there's not a lot to dispute, if you know what I mean.
Well, why is the government not a named party in this action?
Well, they are in effect by proxy through their agents of Donegal County Council and the NSAI, because these are the bodies responsible for the management of the quality standards throughout the country for all of us, and well, for people in Donegal in particular.
Okay, Dave, but before we move on, just so we all have an understanding then, let's just say this is successful. How would the likes of Cassidy Brothers Concrete, Donegal County Council and the NSAI make up these shortfalls? And it wouldn't just be the shortfall. I presume, too, there are people represented outside of the scheme, people with agricultural buildings, holiday homes, second homes, anyone really that's impacted by this, but that is not actually going to get the full benefit of the scheme as it's being sold to us, or actually any benefit from it at all. So who would eventually end up picking up the potentially billion-dollar bill? Billion-dollar, billion-euro bill.
Absolutely, Greg, absolutely. There's two parts to the question. The first part is that the defendants themselves, now we know that it will take state subvention to meet any successful damages claim against Donegal County Council or indeed the NSAI. We won't speak for Cassidy's at the moment. They're obviously fighting a case that will be unfair. But should the case be successful, it will be, of course, the Department of Finance that allocates the funds to allow either a court award or a settlement to go through. That's how that will happen. And your second question there about the people who are not availing are not entitled to avail of the current grant scheme. And people must remember, it's not a redress scheme, it's a grant scheme. We are taking a case on behalf of all affected property owners, and which include all of the people entitled to the grant. The idea being that the grant is sort of set off against the total cost of the home repair or the property repair, which has no grant. So that's how we see any settlement being implemented, if there's to be a settlement or if there's to be a court order.
In terms of the settlement, do you envisage a point, or can you see a point whereby things seem to be progressing quite well and the government feels that maybe it is going to lose this? And then, I mean, it'd be really unusual. I don't know how unusual it might be, but for a legal action like this, or like any legal action for that matter, to have such an impact on a government scheme or government policy. But can you see a point maybe whereby they might say, this is not going to go our way, maybe we need to look at this, in inverted commas, enhanced scheme ourselves?
Well, yes. I mean, what we'd be looking for, of course, is a redress scheme, which is universal in its application. But you're right. The adage that war is not as good as jaw is actually where we see it. And we have good communication with all of the parties to the case. And ultimately, it's going to be down to the facts and the law. And we'll all be looking at the same facts. We'll all be looking at the same law. And I think it's important that there is respect, which there is, between the parties. And, you know, things such as parity of esteem, where we're applying the best experts globally into advisors, and we've done that already. And we really have, you know, got a tremendous, support from industry-leading experts in relation to what has happened and why it's happened. So, yes, we of course people will talk. But the point being that we should only talk when there's a willingness on all parties to talk. Well, we're not there yet, and I wouldn't like the public to believe for a moment that we're on the cusp of negotiations here. We are not. We're fighting the case, but to have good relations is a very important thing.
Okay, well, I think a significant breakthrough, obviously, was allowing this to proceed quicker than it might otherwise. What other major, could you call it, wins do you think your side has had, Dave, in this regard, regard of the whole case?
We've had a legal first in the case already, and that is that all the participants in the case each have their own writ, because we don't have a class action structure in Ireland. So what we've agreed with the state and all the defendants is that they do not have to put in an appearance to each case, and we are serving each case electronically. What that means is that there's absolutely no risk to any participant in the case now, should the case not be successful. So it's free for all of the homeowners and property owners in Donegal to join this case to advocate for the vindication of their own rights. So, I mean, from our own legal point of view, we're very, very pleased with it. We believe that it's unique, and it is unique, and we're quite satisfied that we've done a good job to protect members of the case and those that continue to join it.
Do you see this happen? I beg your pardon. Sorry, Dave. I was going to ask. Say, for instance, one case was successful whereby it was deemed that a homeowner shouldn't have to fine €50,000 for their house to be repaired. Do you see then the House of Cards falling, or then do we move to someone with an agricultural shed and that goes through the process separately? Like, do you believe this will be fought in stages, or will success in an opening case pave the way for success for everyone else? Like, I mean, this could, to certain elements of this scheme and challenging it, theoretically, we could be looking at 10 or 15 years if each individual sort of argument had to be proven through a case. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but I'm just asking for clarity.
No, you're not wrong. How we're dealing with that point is that we have chosen pathfinder cases, which will encapsulate all of the law and all of the facts as applied to everybody within these pathfinder cases. And once they are decided, the courts will have pronounced upon those particular set of facts which apply to all. So there's, it won't be the situation that the state would then start to fight individuals, because that would lead to massive legal costs and a public outcry on further public purse damage going to lawyers, which is not in anybody's interest.
Okay, interesting. Dave, anything that, I mean, you're the expert here, anything else that you think we should mention just as we wrap it up?
No, the only thing I'd say to your listeners is that, you know, we are a private law firm running a private case, and we encourage people to join. But ultimately, we will have to close our numbers, and we don't want to leave anybody behind, particularly when there's no risk to them. So I'd encourage people to, you know, not to sit back and wait to see what happens. It's happening. Mm. And, you know, if we have to close our ranks, we will advocate, of course, for our clients first.
Okay, well, there are people...
And that's our job.
There are people who strongly suspect, and they may well be right, that their house is affected by defective concrete, but they can't afford testing right now, and they're probably waiting on this enhanced scheme from government to have access to more affordable testing. Do you have to have it proven through the process that you have... been affected by defective concrete before you can join this case, Dave?
No, absolutely not, Greg. People, they know themselves. If it walks like a duck and waddles like mm-hmm. a duck, it's a duck, and they feel themselves that their houses are affected, they should sign up. They don't need to show a positive test or anything like it. We understand the position that they're in. They won't be asked to put their hand in their pocket to fund testing. That will happen in the fullness of time. In order to get on the scheme. But we will agree with the state what that testing is and how it works. Mm. At the moment, we're at, just finalising the protocols for testing the quarry in Buncrana, and we are also organising the protocol for testing of the lead homes. So this will be done in the next few days, and we'll commence testing in the next couple of months.
Is foundation therein, testing part of that process, Dave?
Oh, yes, okay. Absolutely. Right, okay. It's quite clear that there are anomalies within the current grant system in itself, and it's a good opportunity for the revisiting IS 465, which is the basis upon which testing is done, and indeed things such as foundation testing. Mm-hmm. So we're bypassing IS 465, and we're doing our own set of testing, which we believe is more equal and more fair homeowners.
Dave, thanks for your time this morning and giving us that update. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
All right,
thank
take you. Care. Dave Coleman from Coleman Legal. If you want to get involved in that, I'm sure you can just search Coleman Legal and you'll get some contact details there, or we can dig them out here if you want to give us a ring.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Okay, so obviously it's 25 years since the Good Friday Agreement was established, and quite interesting, as we were in Brussels during the week, there was a special event held to mark the 25 years, but also two MEPs and others in Europe at pains to point out that, and maybe we don't hear it that often, that the EU played quite an important role in establishing that, and of course then supporting Ireland subsequently through programmes like peace initiatives and what have you. We're going to talk now to Paddy Hart, Chair of the International Fund for Ireland. Good morning to you, Paddy. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, I just thought it was quite interesting, you know, because I haven't really heard much of it before. You know, we know America's involvement, we know the main players on the island and in Britain as well. But, you know, the EU has, and it was recognised at that conference, has played quite an important role in brokering and maintaining peace and trying to improve the lives of many here.
Yes, I suppose, Greg, everyone knows the International Fund, but I think it's important, it's just as you said, that it is a really fabulous diaspora project where it brought the United States, Canada, New Zealand, Australia together. That would be point one. And then once you think about the peace process, it started probably at the civil rights movement, Greg, in the 1970s, when it was really started with quiet peacemakers working diligently, painstakingly to try and resolve the fact that violence had come into communities. And then in 1985, the Anglo-Irish Agreement, was written in the International Fund out of the Anglo-Irish Agreement, brokered by both governments. Now, what is not so well known, and that's why it's, I'm delighted you've given me the opportunity to talk about it. In 1989, the EU joined Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and the United Kingdom in brokering and building peace. So the EU has been a champion of peace building in Ireland, Northern Ireland, the border counties since 1989. It is, the International Fund alone, between 1989 and 2010, it has contributed 350 million euros. Mm. And of course, about 1994, the peace program started to appear. And the International Fund we work very closely with the peace programs. Then, of course, the Good Friday Agreement, and then the SCUPB and the more significant peace programs. But I think it's really important to give the EU its role, obviously in the Good Friday Agreement 25 years ago, but for much longer than that. And the EU was very heavily involved and building the blocks and paving the way so that the Good Friday Agreement could come about.
And I suppose if we're all in the, you know, we're going all down the fair route, I think that Britain still contributes to this fund, even post-Brexit and outside of the EU, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right, Greg. It continues to do so. It's taking, in fact, it's taking a greater interest in the fund since Brexit than it did before, because it recognises the challenges that communities are having, challenges at the border, challenges of identity. So the British government and the Irish government have become increasingly involved in the fund. Big interest, continually big interest in the US, of course, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. So everyone is coming on board more and more, because everyone is beginning to recognise the fallout that has come as a result of the United Kingdom leaving the EU.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the projects it has supported and what it might support in the future, like, how do people apply, or individuals or groups, or who is it open to?
In one way, it's open to everyone. However, the fund is not it's not an open competition where you apply to it. After 37 years, we have very good contacts in all communities and Northern Ireland and the border counties, so we can very quickly find out where there's a need, and we will send some of our people in to work with groups to try and get them the capacity to work with the fund to deliver what is it they want. And I suppose why we do it that way is because we try to focus on those groups who are least capable of putting applications and proposals together, communities that have been marginalized and feel outside of mainstream. You know, there are lots of groups who are well capable of making their applications. So that's why where our approach is more targeted than it is open competition.
And over the years, you know, I've spoken to too many to mention different groups or organizations that have been funded through the various tranches of this type of peace funding. And the effort has always been to sort of, you know, build bridges, more inclusion, people playing sports together or whatever it might be. And we should never lose sight of the fact how quickly that work can be undone. You know, that there are always going to be elements that would like to return to, you know, the greater divisions of the past, to recruit young people into their way of thinking, younger people, maybe 20, 30-year-olds that came through some of these programs. Like, we should never take for granted, I think, where we're at, because with the best will in the world, a lot of this positive peace-building stuff, let me put it like that, can be unravelled really quite quickly. Now, we shouldn't allow that to deter us, but I think we should always be mindful of it, Paddy.
Yes, Craig. I mean, firstly, the whole region has been transformed beyond belief from the dark days of the 70s, 80s, and well into the 90s. And we have to be mindful that violent conflict leaves deep scars, deep-rooted divisions, deep trauma within communities. Right? That leaves lots of communities fractured and very vulnerable to paramilitarism coming in, and as you say, recruiting young people who've been generationally affected by the Troubles. I think what you've got to notice when you work in this for a good while is it doesn't stop with the generation that were directly involved. It transcends generationally. So we're very, very aware that young people are very vulnerable to paramilitary recruitment. And you would see in the news at the moment is that the dissident Republicans are doing a lot of recruitment in the Stavanger area. Dissident Loyalism is doing a lot of recruitment in the in Belfast, wider Belfast area. A significant majority of our funding and our time is spent in working with young people to give them more positive pathways, so that the option of getting involved in paramilitary activity isn't there.
And look, there is a political vacuum there now, and there are always individuals and groups prepared to go in and fill that. There's no doubt that this work is easier with a functioning and stable political system in Northern Ireland. It's not just about making decisions and to-ing and fro-ing and arguing. It isn't important to have the structures there in place. They've been well established for thousands of years in society.
Absolutely, Greg. I mean, you can't have a vibrant, healthy, prosperous, growing society unless you have a stable government. However, I think it's important to say that in the vacuums that occur, the community leaders really step up to the plate. They work really hard. They keep lots of things in line. Easter 12 months ago at Lanark Way, there was almost a major outbreak, and community leaders went in, identified the young people, got them out, put them on programs to make sure that they stayed.
I respect well that, Paddy, but I can say that. But if it continues where people can't feed their children, they can't heat their homes, the schools can't recruit teachers, that firefighting that's almost going on will become ever more difficult. So yes, fair play to them, but this can't go on in perpetuity without having a very serious consequence, I don't think, Paddy.
Exactly. I was just going to... So you've just said what I was going to say, that there's only so far that you can expect community leadership to do this. And for the society to work properly, then you need a functioning government. That needs to get back into place sooner rather than later, because it's only so much that you can expect people at the community level to hold the line.
Right, so what situation are we at in terms of the International Fund for Ireland at the moment? So is it open for applications? What kind of applications are being sought? What kind of work's being done? Is there multi-year funding out ahead of us? So just give us we kind of had to brush over an awful lot of stuff, Paddy, but just give us a state of play as where we are now and going forward then.
Okay. Of course, in Donegal, there's been a long history of working with the International Fund, and that's well documented. Going forward on our current strategy, we're looking at a lot of work in communities and partnership. That's cross-border work to try and make sure that the relationships that have been built and any new ones that we can build are continued in the current post-Brexit phase. All right. So we have projects between Inishowen and Derry operating at the moment, between Stavan and Lifford operating at the moment, a very interesting project between Milford and Portadown called Politics in Action, where people begin to learn about each other's politics and about our systems work and have challenging conversations about identity. So there's a lot of that work going on. We have some interesting sports programs coming between Inishowen and Derry, a larger one that's coming. So there's a fairly strong emphasis on sport because it's a very neutral way of bringing people together.
It's a leveler, isn't it? Really, you know.
It's fantastic. It's a fantastic medium. In fact, Donegal Sports Partnership and the Waterside Neighbourhood Trust are working on an active community project, which is absolutely fabulous. It's non-competitive sporting, and people can get together and do whatever types of sporting activity they want with young people, adults, etc. And it's working extremely well. We're going into some of the more our unionist loyalist communities in the Waterside of Derry, working with communities in East and West Donegal under the Donegal Sports Partnership. So that's a very exciting project.
Yeah, and the more I hear, I know you just mentioned them there, not in passing, because of course you realise the work that they do, but the more I hear of what Donegal Sports Partnership do, and the more impressed I am. They seem to be a really good organisation with really good people working there, doing amazing things.
Yeah, my Sweeney is a great team, and you know, in an era where you can sit and look at your phone, and you can get, not only are you not doing anything, you're also at the risk of mental health challenges to you. Whereas Donegal Sports Partnership are doing active sports. They're working off a model from Cork, as far as I recall, from Miles. And yes, they're brilliant. Mm. They're really great to work with.
How much sort of reviewing oversight is there to ensure that this money is being well spent, that there's a bang for the buck, that in other words, it's working? I mean, this money is just not chucked out, I presume, and that's the end of it.
No, we're very appreciative that we're getting US tax dollars, EU tax dollars, Canadian, Australian, New Zealand tax dollars. So we have a responsibility to make sure it's managed properly. So you have a program in Donegal, it's Stephen Barrett, who will first of all assess the project. He will take it to the Joint Secretariats of the Fund in Dublin. It will go to a review group, and that will be challenged by any authority that feels that is responsibility in that particular sector. It then goes to a designated board event where it's assessed again. It then goes to senior civil servants, and a final recommendation goes to the board where the international observers are there. So there's quite an extensive monitoring to make sure that you're getting the bang for the buck and that the right thing's been done.
Yeah, and as I say, look, there's so much there. I can only really skirt around the edges, so to speak. If people want more information about the International Fund for Ireland, a bit of its background, its history, what it's doing, where it's going, is there a one-stop shop there, Paddy?
Well, first of all, the website's very informative, but Stephen Barrett, who is well known, Stephen used to work with Donegal Local Development. And Stephen's now working with the fund, and I have to say, whether he's listening or not, he's doing a fabulous job in making sure that Donegal gets more than its fair share of IFA funding. So Stephen's a good contact. Get his details on the website.
Okay. Now, you're well connected yourself. I think you talked about your international connections there. Can you give us any scoops or exclusives on whether President Biden's going to be visiting our region, Paddy? I'm watching closely for any gives here now, by the way, so no messing.
I'm not that well.
Grapevines, you know what I mean. You would have heard something on the grapevine. Would you rule it out? A wee trip to North Donegal, for example, because I do know there has been a little bit of, let's just say, in terms of people that might have to deal with such a business, maybe some overtime being cancelled and things like that there. So I'm not saying it's planned, but there's something happening there. Would you rule it out?
Well, you couldn't rule it out because they're exploring everything. And look, you have Brendan Boyd, whose dad comes from Glencolumbkill, congressman. He's extremely supportive of the fund. And if anyone can make it happen, Congressman Boyle, I'll do that.
All right, listen, it's been lovely speaking to you. Thanks for joining us, Paddy. Have a lovely weekend.
Have a lovely weekend.
All right,
too,
bye-bye.
Take
care. Thank you. Bye-bye. That's Paddy Hart, who is chair of the International Fund for Ireland. Right, okay, I privately, when we've been covering the story of Gaelscoil na Cathair Mhaistre, I just thought that this is one that had to be pulled out from the 58-odd and allowed to proceed because the timeline was there and everything was ready to go and progress could be lost if it didn't. But it seems that's not going to come to pass. Now, let's see what Deirdre O'Gara on the Parents Association of the Gaelscoil in Donegal Town feels. Good morning to you, Deirdre. Thanks for rejoining us. I appreciate it.
Hiya, Greg. Thanks for having me on again.
Right, OK. So I hope listeners would be very familiar as to the strong argument for this to progress. The Education Minister is in the county today. Any movement, any meetings, any information for us?
Yeah, so basically Norma is in the county today. We got word on Wednesday evening that she would meet with two representatives from the school. So this morning, two representatives went over But unfortunately, we got nowhere. We were so hopeful for good news to come out of this meeting today, but she gave no dates, no timeline, no commitment whatsoever.
Okay, now you presented her and Minister McConnell Ogue, who was travelling with her, you presented her with a dossier, some information as to the current state of play. What did she think when she looked through that?
Well, unfortunately, when one of the parents handed it to her, she refused to open it.
What do you mean refused to open
it? The same for Charlie. She wouldn't look at the pictures, yeah. It was handed to her to open it, to look at all the pictures of the state of the school, and she refused to do so.
Wow.
And same for Charlie McConnell.
Neither of the two of them would care to look at the conditions that school children and teachers are in. The Minister for Education.
Yes. Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's pretty shocking.
It is. It's shocking, it's disappointing, and it's making us even angrier at this stage now. Like, what are we going to do? What do we have to do for Norma?
I'll tell you what we need to do. We need to understand that respect, when we're respectful and use very word, that the politicians serve us, if you know what I mean. And I don't mean that in any real far left or far right way, but you show a courtesy to those parents and you look at those pictures. I'm sorry, but I can't be on the fence on that one. That's just the way it should be. Really, any hopes I can get it to, okay, we've got a meeting. She's hardly going to meet us without good news. That's how I would have been feeling, but nothing positive come from it then, from your perspective, Deirdre.
Yes, exactly. Like, we're out today for a break, for Easter break at 12 o'clock, and we thought we were going to be leaving the school today with such good news. But for the result of this morning's meeting, there's no news whatsoever.
Yeah, well, you know what? We'll not let it go. It's not over. Do you know what I mean?
No.
This can still progress. Deirdre, thanks for your updates over the course of the last while. I'm sorry it's such a disappointing meeting today. I'm sorry that parents were not even able to have their efforts recognised in terms of the photos being viewed and what have you. I think we can get more of an insight from that now. Deirdre, listen, thanks for your time. And well done, by the way, for you and the rest for not sitting down and taking this lightly. I think it's very admirable and I think you'll get there. But thanks for now, Deirdre.
We will, yeah. We are not going to give up. Thank you, Greg. I know.
Jimmy Brogan is a parents' representative on the board of management of Gaelscoil na Cathair Mhaistre. You were at that meeting.
Good morning, Greg. Yeah, I was at the meeting. Yeah, listen, she listened to her concerns. We put across all her concerns that we had. She said that she agreed. You know, she took on the concerns we had and she understood them and all. But, you know, as Deirdre was saying, when we presented her with the dossier, the pictures, now there was also letters and comments from kids and stuff on it. And we asked her to comment on to comment on some of it.
So the children had written down their views about having to
she said she would take it home and look. She'd take it and she would look at it and go through it properly. But when we were there, she didn't look at it. You know, she glanced at one of the pages that the kids had written down three questions. One of them was, "Would you go to work in this condition?" Mm-hmm. And the other one was, "Would you expect children to go to school in a place like this?" And I can't remember what the third one was because I wasn't involved in the writing of the questions. I just seen them roughly this morning. But she didn't answer the questions and she didn't really look at the pictures. You know, so.
Nice. How do you feel coming out of that meeting, Jimmy?
A bit disappointed, really. You know, we weren't expecting the world. We were sort of expecting some sort of a timeline or some sort of a date of when we would get a word on it, you know. But she just gave us no... She said that the project will definitely go ahead. But, you know, we don't know if that's going to be next week or next year or in a couple of years' time. You know, she gave us no indication of when it will be.
All right, OK. Hopefully. Well, listen, Jimmy, keep the fight going. Keep us in the loop. And as I say, heading into Easter now, it's disappointing. But look, it's not over yet. All right, Jimmy, thanks for your time.
All right, no problem, Greg.
Jimmy Brogan there, parents rep on the board of management of Gaelscoil na Cathair Mhaistre. OK, disappointments there for those at that meeting. Right, OK. Keep your calls and comments coming in. Any that we didn't get to, we will carry over to Monday, by the way, because there's a couple of issues that are certainly going to still be there post the weekend.